UVA is under fire for spending millions on Marxist DEI philosophies rather than upholding the academic ideals of its founder, Thomas Jefferson. Plus, we discuss Governor Youngkin's latest actions, both the good and the bad. And we bring you up to speed on why you should care about efforts to flood your neighborhood stores with slot machines. Welcome to Speak Up Virginia, equipping you to speak up on the life, family, and freedom issues that matter most to you. From the Family Foundation, I'm your host, Candy Cushman, with our president, Victoria Cobb. Well, welcome, everybody. Glad to have you with us. And Victoria, I'm glad you're back in the hot seat again. I know you've been doing a lot of travels. We've missed you around in the office for a little bit. I can't say that I feel sorry for you, though, because you've been going to all these wonderful locations and posting these annoying photos on Facebook with Florida sunsets while we're grinding away in the office. So
they are work trips, but I do make sure that I don't miss the beauty around where I'm going. I've been very fortunate lately.
Yes, just teasing you a little bit. Yeah. But you also posted a little bit about some interesting road signs in Florida that you saw.
Yeah, this is kind of a wild place down there. I didn't know that. I mean, I usually, you know, do one side or the other of the coast of Florida. And this time I started on the east, crossed through the Everglades. You know, there's kind of a highway that just, and people told me it was Alligator Alley. And so I was kind of thinking as I'm driving, it was late too, it was nighttime, and I'm thinking, what would happen like if an alligator actually crossed the road? Because it looks low enough that that could happen. And I'm thinking, that's very different than, you know, we do deers around here. That's what we focus on, when deer cross the road. And then I get through that area, and then I see this sign, Panther Crossing. I've never seen that before anywhere, apparently. And I just sat there and thought, well, now what do you do? How fast does that go? And anyway, it's a wild place down there.
Okay, either way, I think what you do is just sit in your car and wait, whether it's alligator or panther. We're not messing with those.
Yeah, no.
You just sit and wait, right.
And then, they had signs later the next day. I saw signs, one sign that had both gopher and tortoise crossing. And I sat there and thought, my gosh, they have like every size and speed of animal. And you just better be, you know, like really paying attention to what's going on while you're driving. No sleep driving down there.
Well, speaking of reading the signs, yeah. While we're in the middle of this whole veto season,
yes.
You know, trying to read the signs on that, I did want to talk a little bit about Governor Youngkin and the veto actions.
Yeah.
So I will say, I did want to hit on, we are still hearing from a lot of people at the Family Foundation. They're really upset about Governor Youngkin signing this same-sex marriage bill. I just heard from a mom the other day in Gloucester. I mean, she was super upset about it, just heartbroken. She said they were heartbroken as a family that he took this action. And I know you've had a few days, you know, on the road to process this. I just wanted to hear where you were at, because I thought it might help some of our listeners. And I will also just mention, it's also got a lot of play in the media. I'm just going to show real quick the Richmond Times-Dispatch. This was on their front page, this headline about Family Foundation calling it a major disappointment. So kind of, could you help us process this a little bit as we're coming out of this?
Yeah, sure. It was interesting that it got front page coverage. I literally got off a plane in Florida, met with a supporter of ours who had already seen it. I hadn't even known. And he was just, there you are on the front page. And I thought, oh, wow, this is really getting attention. And in some respects, it should, because it's unexpected. It wasn't expected that Governor Youngkin would sign this bill. And I think that is why people are so disappointed. I think because he's a man of faith, and because functionally same-sex marriage happens in Virginia, this isn't even needed. Even if he was wrong on that issue, this bill was a divisive, just sort of them trying to get their thing in our code. And I think it was just such a mistake. People were just so floored. And of course, I mentioned this last time, are making a big deal about the fact that it's a Christian governor that has done this. And so I think that's why our folks are just really disappointed, because they know he's such a strong man of faith. And it is hard. We never enjoy being on the opposite side of an issue with a governor that we generally agree with. There have been times in the past we've had to do this. I can remember one really hard time with a previous governor where we had to say, look, we can agree, you know, 99% of the time, but this action was really bad. And it was that's a hard thing to do. It's not fun to be the organization that has to stay true to what is right, no matter what the politics does. And sometimes legislators, elected officials, because our positions often align with things that Republicans do, they tend to want to think of us like, oh, they'll just go along and get along. And we aren't. We're not a partisan organization. We're on issues. And so I think that's the hardest part, is they sort of get comfortable and think like, oh, they're not going to criticize me because we're all sort of playing on the same team. And then sometimes we have to stay the course. I will say that that former governor, that it was such a hard time when we did it last time years ago. I will say after he got out of office, I remember being at his birthday party and he said, you know, you were probably right. And I thought, yeah, in the moment, I think those are hard decisions for governors.
Yeah.
They're hard. And I think they get some bad advice. And I think when they can remove themselves from the moment of the politics, they know what's right and wrong, and that wasn't necessarily the best move. And I'm not saying I want him to regret it, but I do hope that, you know, there's a day where he kind of steps aside and goes, wow, that wasn't my best choice. And a lot of our supporters are part of just praying for our governor all the time. You know, I'm on a prayer call almost every week that started during the campaign season, started long before he was ever our governor, that prays for him every week. And so those folks are just disappointed because he's such a focal point of their prayer, and they just want him to do, you know, what is right.
Yeah.
And so I think there is just a great disappointment.
Well, for me, I thought, you know, I don't know why this happened, because I'm seeing these polls, like NBC is reporting that support for same-sex marriage has gone down. So to your point that it felt unnecessary.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I did feel convicted. I really need to be praying for our elected
right.
leaders. We don't fully understand the pressure they're under, all of the different things they're hearing, the decisions they're weighing. You know, Lord, help me to pray for
yes.
my governor.
That is our responsibility, as much as voting, as much as holding them accountable, is to pray for them.
Well, for those people that just feel disillusioned a little bit, hurt, how do they, because like you said, we don't want to feel like these leaders feel like they have us in our back pocket,
right.
they can do whatever, but at the same time, Governor Youngkin is doing really good things at the same time. So
right.
how do people
yep.
move ahead and act on this, and just help them kind of keep going
yeah.
here in the right way? How do we respond firmly, but also with just wisdom?
I think people just need to remember our job is to call balls and strikes. Like, our job is to, this is good, this is not good. It's not to be on the team with an elected official. We're working together towards things, and sometimes they don't get them all right. And so that's not to, a lot of people take it to extremes, like, oh, this person is now the worst person in the world because they did this one thing. No, he's done a ton of great things, and he's got a lot of hard decisions right in front of him right now. So we got to keep praying, and we got to thank him when he does the right thing, and we got to tell him when he does the wrong thing. And I think when we do both, and both are important, I think sometimes we kind of forget the thanking part too, right?
So right,
like,
we do. Yeah.
I mean, you know, he had a hard veto on the surrogacy bill that he's mm-hmm. already given us. He's had, I mean, there are good things that happen right alongside of that. And so I don't want us to, I hate expressions, but throw the baby out with the bathwater, make it seem like this is all bad.
They're human.
Yes.
Yes. Part of a godly role is accountability to voters and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think you stated that well. Well, on that note, Governor Youngkin has taken action on even more bills. I don't know. There's some like 2,000
yeah.
that he's going to look at. So this is going on. And I'll just mention a couple of really good things that he has done. So it looks like he vetoed regulations that would have basically enforced these DEI type of requirements onto companies. And we've seen Governor DeSantis draw this really bold line with companies adopting what he called corporate wokeness. And so I thought it was really encouraging to see our governor also taking a strong action in this area.
Yeah, this is an area Governor Youngkin has been very strong on. I mean, he immediately walked in and changed. We had a DEI office, and he turned it into diversity, opportunity, and inclusion
That's
instead
right.
of equity. So remember, he's kind of been on this, and he's been paying attention to it in K-12. And so that's been good. And so now he has this chance to kind of look at a bill that they sent him that, yes, it was basically, you know, if your board has enough people who identify as women. So again, this whole issue of, are you actually a woman or are you somebody who thinks you're a woman? But we'll set that aside right now. But if you know, then you would be more eligible for these economic incentives and
yeah.
whatnot as a company. And again, this is just, the governor called it, quote, unconstitutional and intrusive government intervention. So again, it's this idea that like we're going to tinker with who we choose based on how you, what kind of identities you put into your leadership. And we want to be a commonwealth that supports merit and supports companies that are doing innovative things. We don't, the idea that who's behind it is based on sort of demographics it's just really disappointing. And we've had programs like this in the past. This is not the first time, you know, when they passed programs in the past that put forward, you have a better shot at a contract with the government if you have a woman or a minority at the head of your business. I know a bunch of men that literally put their business in their wives' names. Does that actually accomplish what? You know what I'm saying? Well, business yesterday and today, but it just switched to who's the ownership.
I mean, we've also seen how DEI is not helpful to quality in the airline industry, to name one.
Well, that's the other thing. So. You want to hire people, and you want people on your boards that do the best job. And those might be people who happen to be women or who happen to be of different ethnicities. But the point is, we want companies that want the best. And the idea that we're going to tinker with that doesn't make
any. It's very Marxist.
It's very disappointing. And so I'm pleased that he went ahead and vetoed this to keep us on track and keep. I'm glad that he's been paying attention to this. I think that's important.
Well, I also wanted to address another especially intense battle happening at the Capitol right now. And we really haven't had a chance to address this yet. But it is basically this war happening over so-called games of skill in convenience stores.
Yeah, this is possibly one of the biggest battles of session. I mean, I think the marijuana took front stage, the gun bills were big, and then the skill games, as they call them.
I'm sorry, I just find that really humorous, that basically slot machines. I mean, you're talking about kind of the skill level, like tic-tac-toe,
Yeah, this is not high skill.
It's disturbing because they've tied kind of a video game feel to gambling, which can you get more addictive?
That's exactly the challenge is, and I think especially as kids are more and more brought up on video games and that addictive feeling of winning rewards. I mean, think about if you don't have kids, watch the video games they're watching these days. And it functions and it builds sort of an addiction in the video game. And then all we're doing is now this bill would put these machines inside your local convenience stores. And so the concern is really this idea that they're going to be in convenience stores, restaurants, truck stops, you name it. And there's virtually no oversight, especially on the age issue. There's a lot of problems with it. But the age issue is a big one. That who's really going to be monitoring? This is not like a casino where you have a bouncer that stands outside and checks cards. You know, are you actually ID-wise the right age? Yeah. This is literally your local, I don't want to use a brand name, but, your local convenience store. And I mean, when I go in there, there's 17-year-olds working the thing, working at the counter. So is a 17-year-old going to rat out their friend that's gambling at the machine? I kind of doubt it.
I mean, we've seen these images of parents with their kids doing these things, elderly, young people. It's really disturbing. I don't know if some of you have walked in the convenience store and seen this disturbing sight of all these people hunched over these machines. But it's not just a few of them. I want to make that clear. We're talking about thousands. Truck stops, too.
Yes. And I think, it's like legislators couldn't get enough with the fact that we already have, we had horse racing a long time ago. We added lottery. Then we've now added sports betting and casinos. It's like, can we really not say that there's enough gambling opportunities in Virginia? So we got to add this one more. And this is not even one, when you think about casinos, their argument for a casino, now I can disagree with it, is that people will come from out of town. It will draw tourism. Mm-hmm. I don't think your local convenience store is going to draw out of towners. No, this is about the people who are addicted in your community having more access to bankrupt their family. And that is devastating. And of course, we got to talk about the bill's sort of Orwellian name, right? So the name of the legislation isn't skill games or gambling. It's Virginia Small Business Economic Development Act, right? So this is the whole thing has been put forward as this is all to raise money, to have more profit for these local convenience stores.
Well, and you mentioned briefly the connection to crime. And
yes, that needs to be mentioned.
Yeah, and I just want to show this little clip of how that actually is documented, the association with more crime. So let's just play that real quick.
Investigators say Terrell Hardy and Leonard Jones were caught on camera stealing a gaming machine in the Mount Vernon section of Alexandria.
We have new information about a triple shooting inside a Richmond convenience store.
Within the past few years, this seems to be an increase in crime.
Convenience store slots, the so-called gray machines, bring crime and violence to vulnerable Virginia communities. Enough is enough. Tell your lawmakers to vote no on predatory convenience store slot machines.
Well, I did hear that hundreds of convenience stores and truck stop owners came out to really pressure our General Assembly members on these gambling machines. And so, I want them to also hear from families. I feel like the voice that they didn't hear was your voice, the voice of average families in Virginia. So how do we balance out this equation? What needs to happen now, Victoria?
Yeah, people really do need to contact the governor's office. On our website, familyfoundation.org, there's this veto page where all the bills are listed and it has a take action button. We really need folks to send a message on this. I know for a lot of people, they think, well, my family's not addicted to gambling, so it doesn't impact me. We really, really need to stand up for those that are vulnerable and those that are going to get caught in this. And so I'm really asking folks to go ahead and make their voices known. It is easier for the governor to do the right thing when he's heard from tons and tons of people on his side. That helps him. If he wants to do the right thing, it gives him cover. It gives him a reason. If he is shaky, it makes him think twice about it. And so we don't know exactly where he is. He's mentioned he has heartburn about this. He's mentioned he doesn't love these. But there's a lot of pressure, and the pressure is bipartisan. It is, unfortunately, this bill is not just a bunch of liberals. It is all sorts of people who have bought into a terrible sort of economic formula thing that they think somehow this is going to be okay. So contact the governor.
Yeah, we really need to love our neighbor in that way. I think that's a great point that you made.
Yeah.
Well, it's that time again. Time for our Inconceivable Moments Award. This is where we're featuring examples of the absolute lunacy and craziness that happens when cultural leaders try to give guidance completely apart from biblical principles. And we're calling this the Liberals' Most Inconceivable Moments Award.
Inconceivable!
Okay, well, we were talking about DEI a little earlier in the show today, and I just have to bring up that UVA, University of Virginia, is really in the thick of it right now. They are all over national headlines because, get this, they literally are shelling out an estimated $20 million to pay for 235 DEI employees. Let's just watch a real quick Fox News clip on that.
If you haven't realized by now that DEI is a grift, let me just take you to school. Specifically the University of Virginia, which spends nearly $20 million a year on DEI. Open the books, FOIA'd the college, and some of the staff members make more than the president. The global chief diversity officer, Martin Davidson, is raking in $450,000 a year. That's nearly $600,000 when you factor in his benefits. Kevin McDonald, the VP for DEI, he makes over $400,000. And then there's Chief Diversity and Community Engagement Officer, Tracy Downs. 400 G's. Good work, if you can get it.
Okay, I got to say, I just love how he ended that, you know, if you can get it, because I think we're all kind of thinking, maybe I'm in the long, you know, the wrong line of work here.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't think this is people's, you know, I don't think everybody, you know, grew up thinking, I'm going to be a DEI officer and I'm going to make, you know, $500,000, which is what, you know, some of their employees make.
That's the new career ambition for young people. I'm going to grow up and be a DEI.
Well, this is terrible, but half of me, when DEI got popular, I used to think, like, this is just, especially when it's at a college like UVA, I used to just think this is literally people trying to employ their gender studies and their racial, you know, all these kids that got degrees that really don't have any place and don't do anything. This is them just creating a whole field of employment.
Seriously,
And then when the university has 235 of them, I think, oh my goodness, it's absurd.
You have to wonder, I'm sorry, but you have to wonder what your kid is learning.
Yeah.
If you send them there with this amount of attention on it.
I'm just curious. I'd love to compare that to like certain departments. Like, you know, does their economics department have 235 employees?
Well, it is spread. I think it is spread across all of their different entities.
I'm sure it is. But that's just a stunning thing. But remember, okay, I mean, this stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the idea that this concept being thrust into every area of UVA. And I think we have to kind of contrast that to what's happened in Florida. I mean, I think that's only fair that just a few days ago, the University of Florida ended its whole DEI program and it's freeing up something like $5 million now.
Just $5
million. Just five. I mean, we're talking UVA is quadruple that, I guess. Yeah. We were quadruple that. And it's just embarrassing when you think about UVA. And of course, it's most known for its founder, Thomas Jefferson. I feel like we can say that it would probably not be something that Thomas Jefferson actually aligned with when you watch with this whole thing playing out.
So I guess it's a good thing. It's a redemptive thing that is happening, that the word is getting out on this. So you had it brought up in a U.S. House committee hearing. Elon Musk even retweeted a story about it. So there's this watchdog group. We have to give a shout out to them.
Yes.
Good job.
For finding this and letting us know.
Yeah. OpenTheBooks.com, I believe it was, brought all this to light through FOIAs that they did. And one thing I thought that was interesting that they pointed out was you have to understand that this is being done in a lot of ways on the backs of taxpayers and their own students. It's, you know, you're taking away from other things. So they pointed out that it would take full tuition payments from a full 1,000 undergrads to cover just the base pay of these DEI experts.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like as a parent with kid about to go to college, we look very carefully at the prices of these schools. And Virginia State schools are not known for having that great in-state tuition. There's actually many states that have. So you sit there and look at this UVA cost of admission, and you think, well, this is where it's all going. This is why our colleges are more expensive than they need to be. So that's pretty devastating. So it's our tax dollars, and it's parents that are going to be paying these tuition prices, and they're paying for these guys.
It's maddening. But do you think getting the word out like this, you know, the governor took some action in the corporate area, and then the word's getting out on the universities, do you think it's going to help?
I do hope that it, I mean, I got to be careful here, but I do hope all these alumni that just sort of don't think about it and support their alma mater sit there and go, am I going to still send all these checks to UVA when this is the kind of school that they're developing? I think we need to get UVA back on track. And the legislature can help with that. I think its alumni can help with that. So I'm glad that it's out in the open and that we can start making a difference.
I really pray and hope that we do that, because I see the threat. I'm sorry. I see the threat that China is becoming, and we need to be prepared to compete. So I'm seriously worried. But so I hope and pray that people do wake up in
time. Absolutely.
All right. Well, on that note, you know what this means. UVA is getting this week's Inconceivable Award for taking DEI investment to inconceivable levels, or rather, just unprecedented lows. Well, thanks for joining us. We have lots of sobering news on these shows, but we have lots of fun sharing it. And we hope we're encouraging you that your voice does make a difference. So remember to spread the word, share our YouTube playlist. Join us on Apple if you're an audio-only listener, and give us that 5-star review to help get out and reach more folks with the messages that we are sharing. Remember, we are stronger when we speak together. See you next time.